It occurs again here in Book 10 at Chapter 5, and it's the same proper function argument now applied to the question of pleasure. So first, let me review what that proper function argument is, and then secondly, look at it in its context here in Book 10 about pleasure. The proper function argument that Aristotle offers is basically this, that just as there are certain animals which have certain traits, so beavers are able to build dams and rivers quite well, and certain kinds of birds build certain kind of nests, and certain spiders make certain kinds of webs, and that one can see from their very characteristic activity the things within the creature that make possible that activity, that the creatures are particularly well suited to do something or other. This is called their proper function. He says, similarly, in the realm of human artifice, in the realm of tools, or in the realm of musical instruments, in the realms of political arrangements, one can see the proper functions of some of these tools. So having a hammer, for instance, and seeing the things that hammers are particularly good for, driving nails or prying them, other things could possibly be used for hammering nails. If I had a stapler, for instance, made out of metal, it could be used for hammering, and I'll have to admit I've done it a time or two. But frankly, it doesn't work very well for that, and after I finished using the stapler for a hammer, it doesn't do its own proper function very well, precisely because of the ways in which I've dislodged the gears. Aristotle's transference, by analogy, then, is to say that just as for many animals, and just as for many pieces of human artifact, so, too, there is even for human beings as a whole a certain proper function, which can be identified precisely by looking at what it is that we do uniquely, different than other species, and yet that all of us in some way or other do. This is, of course, for Aristotle, rationality, that we are capable of understanding things, capable of articulating them, capable of dividing them up into groups and classifying them, and then not just speculative rationality, but practical rationality, that we are capable of making decisions and deliberating about those decisions, considering means to ends, considering the amount of expenditure and the amount of energy required for a particular course of action, considering the likely consequences that will flow from that action. This is why so often here in the Ethics or in the course of its joint book, The Politics, one sees him thinking about the varieties that are possible by virtue of human ingenuity with respect to human social organization and political organization, and his ability to take note of the ways in which different practical solutions can solve some of these social and political problems. But whatever the practical solution, he takes note of the fact that our rationality, the ability to come up with such solutions, is so deeply intrinsic to us. Now, mindful of that general argument that human beings have a proper function, namely rationality, which other creatures do not enjoy, and which can be cultivated in us by cultivating the various intellectual virtues that we discussed in Book 6, by cultivating the various moral virtues that we discussed in Books 3 and 4 and 5, all under that general rubric of virtue that he discussed in Book 2, Aristotle now turns that same pattern of analysis, that same inclination to look at this argument, to the subject of pleasure. And he urges that when we turn this analysis to the notion of pleasure, we realize that pleasures are associated with many of the activities that we do, bodily activities as well as intellectual activities, but the very fact that there is pleasure associated with some of the bodily activities and pleasure associated with some of these intellectual activities lets it be clear that the pleasure itself isn't the goal of the activity, but that rather pleasure is something that is concomitant and appropriate to the activity because it helps us to bring about that activity more often or to do it better or to do it in a way that will be more fruitful for us individually and as families and ultimately as political communities. In this way of looking at pleasure as something that isn't the very goal of the activity, but rather as something that often will come along with the activity and will incline us to do the activity which we otherwise might or might not do, but which we can learn to do very well and do virtuously, Aristotle comes to see a place for pleasure, as I indicated in the beginning of this lecture, that is moderate. It doesn't so concentrate on pleasure as to make it the end and be all of ethics, But neither does it exclude a role for pleasure, being merely suspicious about this as something that we're intrinsically selfish or intrinsically base or in somehow intrinsically disordered.